Godot is a free, open-source game engine that's growing rapidly in popularity. Rematalk is a new public benefit company founded by Godot engine veterans Heinz-Peter von Braun and Ariel Manzer. The goal of Rematalk is to help make Godot the number one choice for creating, deploying, and monetizing games on iOS and Android. Heinz-Peter joins the show today to talk about his early career in Linux infrastructure, the shift to working on game engines, and his current work on Rematalk. Joe Nash is a developer, educator, and award-winning community builder who has worked at companies including GitHub, Twilio, Unity, and PayPal. Joe got his start in software development by creating mods and running servers for Gary's Mod, and game development remains his favorite way to experience and explore new technologies and concepts.
Welcome to Software Engineering Daily. I'm your host for today's episode, Joe Nash, and today I'm joined by Heinz-Peter von Braun. HP is a longtime Godot contributor and games industry veteran and co-founder of Rematalk, which aims to make it easier to build mobile games with Godot. Welcome, HP. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So we've got a bunch of stuff to talk about in relation to Godot and mobile development on Godot and Rematalk, but I want to start with your Godot journey, because I'm aware that you're on the board for Godot and you've been a contributor for a long time. So how did that start for you?
Oh, God. We can go very far back. When I was a wee little kid, my dad had a ZX Spectrum, and I was very interested in the basic code, etc. Made games go, make computer go brr. So I learned basic on that thing because I wanted to make video games. Then I basically set my entire school and everything in the idea that I want to make video games. And then obviously I ended up doing infrastructure work. So I then spent the next, 20 years, I guess, doing like Linux admining, data center development, things like that, until I got very, very, very bored with that. And then I was like, I have all these video games I want to make, so I'm going to start making a game. And previously, all I was ever ended up doing was making video game engines, right? Because I'm a nerd. So I ended up, instead of making games, I ended up making game engines. And at one point, I was like, you know what? I'm never going to make a game engine and a game, so I'm just going to pick a game engine, and I'm going to use it to make a game. And I picked Godot. The first thing that happened was that Godot didn't work on newer versions of GCC, and I was like, that can't be right. So I ended up fixing that. And the story since then is basically that I still haven't made a video game and have been a video game engine engineer for the past 10 years now, I guess. So after a while, the Linux infrastructure stuff became completely unbearable, and I quit my job, started a company specifically to do consulting for Godot called Prehensile Tales. So I've been doing that for quite a while now. And then about a year ago, Ariel approached me with an investment opportunity for a new Godot company, kind of like modeled after other startups. And I was very excited, so I jumped up on that. So that's what I've been doing for the last year. Yeah, and when I got into Godot, the community was much smaller. And if you started doing things, you kind of rose up the ranks fairly quickly. So I ended up on a leadership position like fairly quickly. I want to say like 6 months to a year or something like that. I ended up on what was then called the Project Leadership Commission, which was when we were still a Software Freedom Conservancy project. I then helped set up the new Godot Foundation as a nonprofit in the Netherlands, and I am treasurer of that now. So that is in a very brief section. So wanted to make video games and not game engines, ended up owning two game engine creation related companies. So that's fantastic. I'm doing great.
Living the dream. So yeah, obviously that was a fairly early into Godot's journey after it, I guess, went fully open source. How did you discover it at the time? Like, where did you find Godot back then?
That's a good question. I think I was just looking for open source game engines, and I was always interested in the topic because I always had this in the back of my mind. And then I saw the Godot is now open source tweet, probably from Juan at some point. Then Godot went from 1.0 to 2.0. And at the, I have to say, and since this is a bit of a nerdy audience, I think this is a thing that they can relate with too. Originally, I was like, well, this thing is, I have all of this together and I can't make any technical choices myself. And originally, I kind of dismissed it as something that I wouldn't actually be able to use. And it would be too, batteries included, basically. Right. And I actually started another game using my own engine. And then I was like, this is not going to work. So I ended up just trying Godot, and I was super impressed by, like, okay, sure, you can't make certain technical choices, which originally really sort of like hurt me to my nerd core.
Right.
But once I got used to it, I was like, actually, like, well, now I don't have to think about all of these things and I can just make my goddamn game. So that is how it went. I played around with a game engine called, oh God, I can't remember now. It was the open source version of a game engine that was once used by Tribes. Oh, what was it called? Oh, this is really good.
It's going to annoy you for the whole conversation now.
This is going to annoy you for the whole conversation now. It doesn't matter. Anyway, I tried that engine for a while. I used Ogre 3D for a while. And in the end, it was just like, well, with Godot, you just install it and it just works, right? So.
Welcome to a world where your reading list becomes your listening playlist. Introducing listenlater.net, the new service that turns articles into podcasts. Have you ever stumbled on an interesting article but just didn't have the time to read? Maybe you're driving, working out, or just relaxing at home. With listenlater.net, email us the URL and voila, our AI transforms it into a captivating podcast narrated by a voice that you'll love listening to. And that's not all. ListenLater takes your inbox to the next level. Send us any email and we'll convert it into your personal podcast. It even handles text from attachments. Whether it's work documents, newsletters, or that long article you've been meaning to read, we've got you covered. Crossing language barriers? No problem. ListenLater.net now offers multilingual translation and narration. Choose your preferred language and enjoy a world of content right in your ears. Join the revolution of convenience and versatility. ListenLater, where your articles, emails, and documents come to life in audio form. Visit ListenLater.net to start your free trial today. That's ListenLater.net to start your free trial and transform articles into your personal podcast.
TTT engine? TT engine? Heavily modified. Oh, Torque engine.
Torque, that's it. Torque. Thank you so much. It. Torque engine, yes. So I used a Torque engine for a little while.
Yeah.
The thing that really impressed me at the time, and it was before I saw Godot, was just how quickly you could make like 3D scenes by just dropping things in, and the game kind of looked like it looked like on the editor. And Godot does that as well, and in my opinion, just a little bit better. So that is how I got there.
Perfect. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So, you know, you mentioned Prehensile Tales, which, first of all, fantastic name pun, just absolutely brilliant. And then obviously Ram Attack, which is what most of my questions about for you today. So
sure.
First of all, I guess I want to start setting the scene. So what is Ram Attack in like a pitch?
Ram Attack is basically a distribution of the Godot engine where we've integrated all of the nonsense that you need to make an actual game on a mobile platform. So we install the Android SDKs for you and configure them correctly. We make sure that your Xcode is set up correctly if you're on a Mac. And we've done some performance improvements for the 2D and 3D renderer for mobile specifically. So we added some features for the depth pass, et cetera, to make that just faster. And we've improved the way that you can integrate with third-party profiling tools, so you can actually see what's happening on your device. A lot of this stuff has went upstream as well, so this is not entirely exclusive to Ram Attack, but you know, we put it all together in a very easy-to-use package, basically.
Sure.
And the reasoning behind that was that what we found is that if you look at Godot Q&As and the forums and what people ask about in Discord, it's like everyone wants to make games on mobile, but they basically fall at the first hurdle of like doing all of this yuck shaving to get their system ready to even begin to develop a mobile game. So we were like, well, the Godot project, the open source project, can't really solve this because we can't ship a proprietary software and we don't want to, because as an open source project, that's just not our mission goal. So that is how it started. And the next thing, it was, okay, how do we make sure that when people have actually have made a mobile game, that they can actually make some money off of it?
Yeah.
And what we've done there is we've partnered with a ad mediation company, and we have a version of the engine that basically comes with batteries included for everything you really need for mobile. So you sign up for the mediation company, dump your API key into the Godot editor, and then you just drag your ads onto your game, and then you're done. Then you can start shipping a monetized game. That is what we want to do. The idea being that the time frame we set is basically from not knowing anything about mobile to being able to have a monetized game on the App Store in about 2 hours. And I think we're getting very close to that. So that's the general idea. Just make it as easy as possible for developers to either take their existing Godot game and monetize it on a mobile platform, or just use the whole tool chain for a mobile game.
Perfect. Okay. So yeah, speaking to the ads piece. So in the recent GodotCon talk, you laid out, I guess, the challenges of doing an ad-supported game in a way that you highlighted some issues I'd never heard before. And I think one of the things you mentioned a couple of times was that there are various reasons throughout a game's life that a mobile game developer may have to re-export, recompile their game again because of changes to their ads infrastructure. Can you run us through that problem and what mobile developers are dealing with there?
So there's two main problems that mobile developers run into. One of them is simply the fact that Apple and Google are incredibly fickle, and they might change the rules on what you can and can't do on their store anytime. They might change the type of SDKs that you need to use at any time. And every time that happens, you have to do work to keep your game on the store, keep your income from the game going. And that is painful. And with Godot and by extension with Ramatak, what we can do is, because it's open source, we can basically take an old version of the engine and make it so that if you re-export today, that your game works exactly as it did, like when you made it maybe 2 years ago, but now with all of the new requirements from Apple and Google, etc., apply to the game that you already have. We call that like backlog management, and that's, I think, something that is difficult for an open source project to do, because like finding volunteers to take like a Godot version from 3 years ago and fixing it up so that particular version now works in today's app stores is difficult, because it is frankly a little bit boring, and there is just a lot of like it's like paperwork, right? It's paper pushing work almost. So that is something that we do. The other thing is switching ad providers. So ad providers change their payout scheme, that change how much revenue you can actually get from a particular game. But not only that, not every ad provider performs well in every market. So for instance, there are ad providers that work much better in Asia than, say, in Europe. So if you want to really publish your game far and wide, you end up having to not implement one SDK, you end up having to implement 4 or 5 SDKs for different regions, sometimes like different times of day. So what we've done is we've created an abstraction layer in the engine itself that provides ads. So we have basically have a node if you're a Godot, if you've ever used Godot. So you can just create ad nodes in your game with a standard API. And then at export time, you decide what ad networks actually end up be implemented behind those nodes. So what that means is, for instance, you can very easily, say, make a version of your game for an European market with a different ad network than, say, for an American market. Those are the two main challenges that we're trying to address, and also the two main challenges that we've seen from various mobile developers.
Awesome. Yeah. So again, going back to that GodotCon talk. So obviously a lot of the things you mentioned when you introduced Ramatak were like really interesting developer experience improvements, you know, making it seamless to get started building games, not have to worry about all this other stuff. When you were running through why Godot is already very good for developers, you mentioned GDScript, the, you know, inbuilt included scripting language, as one of the things that makes it great for mobile devs. Can you talk a little bit about why that is?
So this is something that exists for all types of games, don't get me wrong. But the way that mobile games are monetized is very around like playtime, and to a certain extent, the negative version of saying that is getting people hooked on it, but I think the more positive spin you can give to that is make something that people want to play, right? And I think that is most of the time a more honest description of what is actually happening. So you need to make a game that people want to play. And in order to do that, you need to be able to tweak your game after playtest really rapidly and change these little things, like does this ball need to like bounce like half a second longer? Is the visual squishiness of this thing like just at peak cute, or is like a little bit more squishiness slightly cuter, etc. There's a lot of these like minutia that on mobile are amplified compared to other games. Mm-hmm. So on desktop, people will try your game, and particularly if they've already spent like $1 or $2 or $3 on Steam on your game, they are more willing to like explore what is there. And if something is not ideal immediately, they are usually happier to kind of like push through that and then find sort of like the hidden gems within. With mobile games, they tend to be free, so people will just install like 5, 6, 7 of them in a day and try which one they want. And if they're not like immediately hooked on it or immediately interested in it, they will just go away, and there goes all your ad revenue, right? This is really about your Descript. I will get there now. So because you need to have this very fluid way of iterating on your game, having a scripting language that is built into the engine and that doesn't need compiling and that you can just live edit basically with your device running is a huge time saver. And it lets you do these iterations maybe 2, 3, 4 times faster, depending on, you know, the quality of your machine. Like if you have some 20 core monstrosity, then probably a C# will be fine. But if you have like a regular sort of game dev laptop or something like that, and you don't want to invest in this, you know, nuclear power plant's worth of computing power, then having something like GDScript is just this force multiplier. Mm-hmm. Not only that, it makes it much easier to create little scripts that say maybe your game designers can actually directly edit rather than having to go through the developers for. So yeah. that is really my main thing where I'm like, GDScript is just this rapid development tool almost for your game feel. And I feel that particularly on mobile, this is a quality that cannot be underestimated.
The importance of, I guess, the extra importance of juice in the mobile section is really interesting. I haven't heard it expressed that way before. So yeah, that, I mean, I'm sold. I think that works. I'm a big GDScript fan already, so I didn't have much selling to do, but that makes a lot of sense.
So I was preaching to the choir, as they say.
Well, yeah, so that leads me on to, you know, something that we spoke about briefly before we jumped on the recording, which is you were working on a project which I think is super, super cool, which is to, you know, bring GDScript to LLVM, or I guess bring LLVM to GDScript, whichever round you think about that. For listeners who aren't aware, LLVM is the low-level virtual machine. It's a compiler backend that's used in all kinds of high-performance programming languages. Can you tell us a little bit about what that project is and the inspiration behind it?
Right. So the main inspiration behind it is that what I frequently see in forums where people come and ask, okay, I want to start making a game in Godot, what do I do? And a large percentage of more veteran game developers will almost immediately steer people towards like compiled languages, with the idea being that it's faster. While technically true, like C# is faster than GDScript, and C++ is even faster, for literally 95% of your games, and of those 5%, like 80% of that code is not actually performance critical. So for the most part, you can make Candy Crush in GDScript, right? Sure. You can make Infinite Runners in GDScript. You can make hidden puzzle games in GDScript. There's no need to use C# for any of that. But because of this, I want to say almost cultural or political thing around that you need your games to be as fast as possible, I see a lot of novice developers getting steered down a path which requires them to set up tooling, requires them to learn an extra language, requires them to learn a new IDE, because generally speaking, using C# comes with using Visual Studio Code, and now you have to install a .NET runtime, and et cetera. There's a lot of ands there. Whereas the experience that I want people to have when they start making games is you download this one executable, you double click it, and you start making a game. Because that is satisfying, you get quick results, and it is very low. There's a low barrier of entry to that. So in part, the reason for the LLVM compiler is simply that. That is to make sure that novice developers, when they talk to experienced developers, that the experienced developers can say something like, yeah, C-sharp might be a little faster, but GDScript is like 90% of the way there, right? So that gives people less of a incentive to have to switch. The other thing is, there is this sort of like 5%, 10% of code that can be slow in GDScript. And the experience there for experienced developers is actually really, really good. Because due to the way Godot is set up with a node system, taking a bit of code in GDScript, making that into a C++ module and just building that into your game is actually really easy for seasoned developers, particularly if they're not only game developers. But for more novice developers, this is a big hurdle because now, again, we have to set up an external tool chain. You have to build this module for all of your target platforms. How do you even do that? How do you get a iOS compiled binary created for your game? It is hard. And this is the sort of like the second tag of this. So I want to make sure that for most of the things you could want to do in your game, like procedural generation comes to mind as one of the main things where GDScript is oftentimes a little bit on the slower side for some people. Making sure that you can write all of that in GDScript and still get 80%, 85% of the performance, which is probably more than good enough. Like, if you have a gigantic development team and you're like thinking between, oh, should I use Godot or Unreal or something like that, at that point, you have the developers to do this. So this is not for them. This is for the smaller teams that need just a little bit of extra oomph. This is a very long-winded answer, I guess, to say it would be good if it was faster.
And I know this is early on in the project, so the technical details might not be fully sketched out yet, but how does that integration work? So you mentioned there, you know, GDScript compiling to GD extensions via C++. Is that how you envisage this being used? Like, where does LLVM sit in Godot in this case? Like, what is the GDScript turning into through LLVM, I guess, is my question.
Right. Yeah, so the way I want to do this is we include a linker, because the project itself is much larger than just the like low-level VM, right? Sure. There's a lot of tooling around it. And the nice thing about LLVM is that all of these tools are available as libraries. So we can have an actual like ELF linker or an PE linker, et cetera, inside the editor itself. So what we can do is ship the export templates as object files, and then the LLVM ahead of time compiled code can just be put in this pile of object files that gets linked as we export. So that is the general idea of what I want to do. The other difficult part for this that we are still kind of thinking about is whether, if you install this, whether we want to still use the old style GDScript VM, or if what we're going to do is take the LLVM VM, the actual VM part of it, plug that into the editor for your very quick runtime, and then at export time, do this ahead of time compilation. There is a bit of things there that are still a little bit unclear, and there's also some interactions that we have with the proprietary platforms, particularly on console, where Microsoft and Sony don't really want you to use compilers that they don't give you, but also they can't really check, so
Is your code getting dragged down by joins and long query times? The problem might be your database. Try simplifying the complex with graphs. A graph database lets you model data the way it looks in the real world, instead of forcing it into rows and columns. Stop asking relational databases to do more than they were made for. Graphs work well for use cases with lots of data connections like supply chain, fraud detection, real-time analytics, and Gen AI. With Neo4j, you can code in your favorite programming language and against any driver. Plus, it's easy to integrate into your tech stack. People are solving some of the world's biggest problems with graphs. Now it's your turn. Visit neo4j.com/developer to get started. That's neo4j.com/developer.
Sony execs don't listen to this bit. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we're not sure how to do that yet. LLVM has an option to actually spit out C instead of LLVMIR. So what we might end up doing is for those targets that instead of spitting out object files, we actually spit out C files. So if you want to publish PlayStation or Xbox, that what you end up getting is just a pile of C files and maybe some kind of project solution. So that if you build the engine, you then build the C files with the compilers for that target platform. Because by the time you're deploying on those kinds of targets, you already have to set up this right. gigantic tool chain anyway. So trying to balance this needs of novice developers or intermediate developers versus like the large teams that know how to set up all of these tool chains, that's kind of the friction point there. How do we make it fast and accessible for everyone?
Interesting. So I guess that leads me to, a general theme, which is RamAttack as a business and what you're making is going upstream. So you mentioned earlier that a lot of what you're adding is going upstream where it makes sense. Can you kind of draw like what kind of stuff do we see moving upstream to Godot?
So anything we do that improves the direct developer experience of using the engine, we end up wanting to put upstream. So we're talking about the improvement in profiling, the performance improvements. That kind of thing goes upstream. The things that we can't put upstream are the things that are directly related to things like the ad networks and things like that. We are thinking about maybe upstreaming the ad abstraction layer, but mm-hmm. that will require some politicking and just making sure that the project actually wants that in the form that we've made it. So that is generally where I draw the line, sort of like I want the RamAttack product's value add to be the sort of like turnkey way of starting mobile development, but not like it being a superior renderer to the open source version and stuff. It is very important to me personally that the RamAttack version is both backwards and forwards compatible with upstream Godot, because one of the things that is difficult about the game engine landscape right now is just that this complete lack of trust in this entire industry, right? Unity's, let's say, escapades have not really helped with that. So I want to make sure that the RamAttack product is safe for developers. That is, okay, you use our version of the engine and we think you will like it better than the upstream version. But we don't want to make it a binary choice in the sense, okay, I've switched to the RamAttack engine and now my game is stuck in this version of Godot. We don't want to do that. So we want to make sure that this is a free choice for our customers or for our users, and that we actually have a value add that isn't like, oh, I've picked this one time and now I don't have a choice right. anymore. So that is kind of where this line is, and I realize that it's a little bit fuzzy because it is a little bit fuzzy because when we add something, will that impact people's ability to take their games out of RamAttack Mobile Studio and into Godot upstream or not? But that is the question we ask whenever we add anything to the engine.
And then, yeah, also, as you said, upstreaming things isn't just a case of you saying, oh, we built this and we like it, off to Godot it goes. They have to also want to have it as well, right?
So. Right, exactly. Because while I am part of the board of directors of the foundation, that does not give me any special ability to like get features merged. There is a process for that, and I can't like skip that process either. Mm. So making things that are generally useful and making things that people want remains the most important thing. Like, one of the things I talked about, just about the engine in general, for like a long time, just as part of the board, when some of this stuff came out, like we talked about adding NVIDIA physics to the engine for a while, for instance, because there was a BSD version for desktops, but you had to pay for it for mobile platforms. And this was well before RamAttack, et cetera. And our general stance on that is that we don't want Godot, the open source project, to basically be a storefront for third parties to like sell special access, right? And that is also something that we have to keep in mind with the features we add here now.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So along the way there, you mentioned just very briefly that there are some rendering improvements to mobiles being made in RamAttack. Can you talk about those? There's one in particular that's very interesting, but I think it's good to intro the general things you're aiming for.
Yeah. So first of all, I am not a rendering engineer. Ramasak hired rendering engineers, but I can give you a high-level overview of what we did. So one of the things is there is an extension, OpenGL extension, that can do some of the depth buffer in hardware, and we've implemented that. Originally, the thinking was that it would not be faster than the CPU method, I guess, for that particular feature. But we found after a little bit of benchmarking that actually using those extensions on the engine actually helped a lot. And we were able to take the third-person shooter demo app and run it on Android with like 40-50% higher frame rates just with some of these little tweaks. So it's those kinds of things that the volunteers like tend to not necessarily have time for, right? So finding like a pile of phones and seeing if this particular OpenGL extension is actually faster than what we sort of like the common wisdom is, things like that. So because we have a rendering engineer, we have a pile of phones, so we can just try these kinds of things. So that's the biggest one. We've also done some things where we are not allocating frame buffers for unused parts of the shader. So that brings down the memory use, particularly on mobile. This is very important down. And we've done some lighting improvements for which I do not know the technical details.
Sure. No, that's very interesting. So I guess one of the, again, from your Godot.com talk, one of the things I hadn't quite appreciated about building mobile games, and I guess that's because, you know, it's very easy as an iPhone person to get locked into like the monolith, is just the amount of platforms you need to support. Can you talk a little bit about that? And particularly, yeah, I think there was something interesting also with supporting itch exports. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, so that was mostly for the web exports.
Sure.
So this comes to Godot 4. So Godot 4 is our next generation of the engine, right? So we've thrown caution in the wind and made a more visually rich renderer, which is great, and it works really well. But the problem is that mobile phones move slower than desktop to a certain extent. But part of the reason for that is that for a lot of people, their mobile phone is basically their only computer. So they buy one and then they use it for basically all of their computing needs. And they sometimes have to stretch this for quite a long time. So the fact that like you can do Vulkan on mobile is great, but there is a lot of phones in which it doesn't work right or is slow, etc. So making sure that you can actually take your 2D game and ship it to devices that are 10 years old, 12 years old, etc. That is actually kind of challenging in the way Godot is set up right now. So one of the things we're doing is we're developing an OpenGL ES2 renderer, which is the most baseline of baseline 3D APIs that is still supported. And the reason for that is primarily to make sure that you can basically take these simpler games that don't need like Vulkan 1.3 with all extensions and just take your Candy Crush, your 2D puzzle games, your other things, and actually deploy them to as wide an audience as possible. So that is the primary, I think, difference between desktop and mobile development, in that the range of devices and also the range of capabilities of those devices is so vastly different. Like on desktop, you have one of three GPU vendors, right? You have an Intel GPU, you have an AMD GPU, or you have an NVIDIA GPU. On mobile, that is not the case, because you could have like a very capable GPU on your device, but the drivers for it were made like 8 years ago and nobody has updated them and they're terrible. So the matrix of things is much wider and much less forgiving as well, because mobile games also have the big, let's say, downside that there is reviews on those websites. So if you create a relatively simple game that people look at in the store and there's simple 2D graphics and they install it on their six-year-old phone and it doesn't run, they're going to give you a one-star review. And that's going to tank your overall standing in the stores, etc. So we want to work around that a little bit by first just testing on more devices and try to fix the higher level renderers on those. But there is no fixing some of these, right? There is just devices that just cannot be fixed. There's no workaround that makes your Vulkan renderer work on some of these devices. So for that, we have the ES2 renderer. And the idea there is just that this will work on everything that can still be charitably called usable today. And doing that, I think, will just open up Godot to way more things. And as we talked about the itch.io exports, people want to be able to export their games as a web export, and Godot 4 does support that, but that needs WebGL 2 support because the fallback renderer is an OpenGL ES3 renderer. And that doesn't work on all platforms either. Particularly Apple seems to be very concerned about allowing people to run WebGL 2 content in their browsers. So they really only work well with WebGL 1, and that sadly requires an ES2 renderer as well. So the idea being that if we upstream this, we get these benefits for these older phones, and we get the benefits for game jam games that just want to ship their games on HIO with a click to play on the browser.
Fantastic. So along the way there, you know, you started talking about Godot 4, which I'm very interested because, you know, at time of recording, RAM Attack supports 3.5.1, right?
Yeah.
And between all these rendering things, and then also, you know, having to support versions in perpetuity for the, you know, the ad updating vision, I imagine your business of like supporting, keeping pace with the Godot open source releases is like a key challenge for you. How do you address that?
So we had, well, first of all, we are all of the people that work for Ramadog have some ties to the Godot community already. That's how we found them. So they are used to the pace of development on the one end, and on the other hand, it is a matter for us of creating a product that we can support on the platforms that we say we will support, right? So that is why the Godot 4 version of the studio is still a little ways out, because we want to have the ES2 renderer in there. We want to have some of these life improvements in there. And the reason for starting with Godot 3 really was pragmatic, in the sense that there are a lot of Godot 3 mobile games out already. So we want to make it easy for people who already have their games to say, okay, I'm going to take the game I already have, add the RAM Attack ads to it, and actually try to make some money off of the games that I've already made, right? And Godot 4 is enough still that the number of games for which that is true is relatively low, because we plan to be entirely compatible with the upstream version by the time we have a version of the RAM Attack Mobile Studio based on Godot 4. The games will also be ready around that time. And because we want to, like I said, we want to be cross-compatible, it is not really a downside for us to not have it yet, because the open source version exists and people can make their games already, right? So that is one of the critical things for us, is that we don't need to be first to market for, you know, platforms, because Godot already exists.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, I think that is bringing us more or less to time. So I wanted to wrap up by asking whether there are any creators in the Godot space, you know, whether mobile specific or not, in particular, that you would recommend to folks who are curious about Godot or looking to improve their skills as they go.
Sure. So first of all, GDQuest makes fantastic learning content, and I cannot recommend his stuff enough. His tutorials are fantastic, super high quality, well polished, definitely worth your time. I have no like financial ties to him, but I can only recommend that try some of his free content, and if you're interested, his page for content is fantastic. Second of all, there is a developer that is making a game called Road to Vostok, which I believe is a sort of a survival looter shooter. I think, I'm not sure if the looter part is correct, but that's kind of the vibe I got. Yeah. And his Patreon, his free pages on Patreon have a fantastic porting log of when he decided to move away from Unity to Godot. And he has a very honest description of things that he really liked, things that we didn't like so much. And the other nice thing is that he has screenshots of his game actually in progress. So for people who are skeptical that like a let's say double A looking game can be made in Godot today, his blogs and his screenshots and videos really, I think, prove that you can. Another interesting project is disclaimer there that they are a customer of mine, which prehensile tail, so take this with a little bit of a grain of salt. But a project called The Mirror is making a very interesting piece of software where they're basically doing a sort of Roblox-y-like thing using Godot that looks really good, and the people who are making it are really nice. And I think that is going to be a very interesting platform for people to get into game dev at all, compared to, say, actually starting to write code right away. So those would be my three main recommendations, I think.
Perfect. Yeah, those all sound great. I mean, the Vostok one especially is It's a very rare occasion to see someone porting their game across platform live, let alone, you know, sharing all of it and sharing their opinions and fully committing to going through with it. So I think that's a really useful recommendation for a bunch of reasons.
Yeah, and that developer is a machine, man. He managed to port some of this stuff in times where I was like, how is this even possible?
Yeah.
And to get back a little bit to something we talked about earlier, he's doing it all in GD script. So yeah.
Valid language.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much. It's been super interesting. I definitely have learned an awful lot about developing games for mobile from your content and from our chat today. So yeah, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. And thank you so much for having me.